Khab. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being here on this hot summer afternoon, foregoing your siestas, which you must all have gotten very used to, even the diplomats here by now. Well, we thought long and hard what to discuss with very illustrious persons like Ahmed Rashid and General Talat. And we have heard the name Game Changer a lot. We heard a lot of names in Pakistan, Game Changer, Crossroads, Out of Box. So the last popular one is the Game Changer, and we thought that, of course, there are a lot of game changers, but in our opinion, the biggest game changer needs to be the security and stability of Pakistan, because all the other game changers will come after that. And therefore, we collectively chose this subject. And security is an issue which is extensively discussed in Pakistan. And that I don't think there's an issue which is more intractable and hard to resolve. It's the most important responsibility for a government, and its absence diminishes economic activity for sure and affects the lives of the people. And while overall security in Pakistan without a doubt has improved, acts of violence still occur regularly. They take place just when we feel reassured that such incidents will never happen again. It's clear that we must take another look at how it has, as to how we have dealt with security and stability so far. If we are to have lasting peace, it is time to overview some long-held beliefs. Economic progress is not possible without security, nor would any game changer work until the country and people are safe. Safety, security, and prosperity, we must realize now, are indivisible. We will also hear today, as Ashraf has said, from two other very eminent experts with a lifetime dedicated to the subject and who have known the world over for their ability. And on my part, I would stress on the human dimension in building security and explore how to put people at its center. I will probe further how state institutions can give comfort to the people. It is important for citizens to have faith that the state protects them and promotes their interest. It is not just armies that make a country secure. The entire country must contribute. The present discourse on security in the public space very clearly is inadequate. We discuss security as a reaction to terrorist incident or in response to a machination of other country. For a holistic response, it needs deep consideration, which in turn calls for consensus on its definition, our goals, and an agreed upon strategy. There should also be clarity on the roles of all actors. They must have resources equal to the task and must deliver on agreed upon timelines. Pakistan has a broad strategy paper in the shape of the National Action Plan. And I'm sure someone is working on it somewhere, though it would be nice to know who it is. Before we grapple with the complexity of present-day security, it would serve us well to ask, what is the goal of national security in Pakistan? Security is more than just absence of violence. Sun Tzu, the great Chinese military strategist, instructs that we must know ourselves as well as our enemy. Let us look at ourselves to know what should be the aims of Pakistan's security plan. And this means that we must state clearly Pakistan's role and interests in the region. Ideally, we want a plan that protects the country from threats of both state and non-state actors. Firms must be able to conduct business freely within the country and globally. Every citizen should be able to have a meaningful role in the economic life of the country. Our civil institutions must work in support of the welfare of the people. Security is not an abstraction. It affects the lives and interests of each person in the country. Within that overall goal, we may develop a concrete understanding of what national security is and what it is not. The logic and nature of violence has evolved since the last century. Though they may still take place, wars between two or more states is no longer the norm. But looking at things recently, I want to touch wood. Nor does violence have a clear beginning or an end. What Pakistan faces today is a situation of neither war nor peace. The lines between what causes it are blurred. A mix of external and internal factors are at play. It is an amalgam of political, sectarian, and criminal factors. Violence in Pakistan takes many forms. Varied actors conduct it, such as street gangs, political groups seeking regional autonomy, and terrorists. They have sponsors in domestic political parties and in external states. Some are linked with supranational ideologies. External forces, however, cannot act on their own. They must have alliances with disaffected groups in the country. Thus, external ambitions mix with disaffection at home to create instability. It is the responsibility of the government to prevent and break these alliances. The country's security should not be the obligation of the defense forces alone. They must be in the forefront, but each part of the government and the whole populace is the next line of defense. We need a new approach. It is not possible to quell present-day violence with strategies from the past. With violence taking many forms and it causes both external and internal, our methods too must change. We must find the reasons for disaffection and exclusion. Pakistan's policymakers must act to respond to grievances within as much as the machinations of other countries. As we have seen, violence is not a one-off event. It has been ongoing and repeated for over a decade. And though some areas are affected more than others, no part of the country is safe. This cannot happen without local support. Outside forces and international ideological movements make common cause with local grievances. Pakistan must engage all its citizens in defense of the country. In several ways, the economy has an important role to play. Sometimes the link between economy and security is clear and direct. The United States achieved absolute success in the Second World War because of its ability to shift civil production capacity to military ends. The United States produced an unlimited supply of war equipment to arm its forces and those of its allies. Economic performance equaled military power. It also has to do with the fundamental choice that a country makes. In the case of Pakistan, despite economic weaknesses, it has built a strong military that can hold its own against any foe. the country was willing to make sacrifices to strengthen its defense. But the present time calls for the country to invest equally in the people. There is a natural path that the disaffected follow. Grievances, perceived or real, lead to demands for change and then to violence. Grievances arise from political, security and economic dynamics, but then violence breeds violence, and it has now become difficult to distinguish cause from effect. According to the World Bank, lower GDP per capita is associated with large-scale political conflict. We need to give hope and opportunity to the people for a better life. That is the only way to regain their trust. It is not an easy task, but not impossible either. Pakistan faces a special challenge in the shape of a large and growing young population. Many of the young people have not had schooling or work-related training. Many have no jobs. In citizens' perception surveys, World Bank has found youth employment as a motive for joining rebel movements and urban gangs. Jobs is not just about income, they are also important for self-respect and status, as well as to impart a sense of belonging. We are also a diverse country. Political exclusion and inequality based on regions, ethnicity, and religion are also associated with violence. Social cohesion and economic opportunity are key. So while other countries and entities find allies within us, we must do everything to stop them from doing so. It is for our state and civil institutions to build trust in all parts of the country. So what should be our response? It is important to develop a stake for the young in the future of the country. And to begin with, our leaders must understand that when people feel that their government does not protect them, or guard their interest, or offer access to justice, and when markets do not provide jobs, the leaders compromise their ability to govern. They must do everything to restore confidence in collective action. And this is the absolute least for the government to do to restore order. As Harvard Law Professor Noah Feldman suggests, that a call for Sharia is a call for rule of law and a way to resist states that define plainly unjust. This is a very meaningful quote of Professor Feldman. Investing in citizens' security, justice, and jobs is essential to reducing violence. Some data is instructive, and I won't throw too many figures at you. 22.6 million out-of-school children exist in Pakistan. We spend less than 1% of GDP in public health. 45% of our children have some form of stunting by age 5. And 32% are born with low birth weight. At 4.7 years, we have one of the lowest average for years of schooling anywhere in the world. Just 2.3% of our senior citizens receive a pension. 63% workers are classified as vulnerable. Clearly, we have not equipped well our young to enter the job market. And it is therefore no surprise that 44% of the country's workforce is in low productivity farm sector. Whereas overall employment is less than 6%, unemployment is less than 6%, youth unemployment is 11%. And I just shared a tip of what is a human security nightmare in Pakistan. In UNDP's Human Development Index, Pakistan ranks 147 out of 185 countries, much below countries at an equal stage of economic development. Governance indicators are worse. the number of outstanding cases in courts and the time it takes to dispose them is the stuff of legend. Weak policing and overall poor service are the rigor with which a large part of the country lives with daily. For a sense of inclusion, citizens must feel that they are taking part in decision making. Pakistan's constitution resolves this with a layered approach. Federal, provincial, and district or local governments afford a sense of participation to the people. But sadly, many political parties are averse to fully sharing power and resources at the local level. Inclusion is about empowering the people so that they can play a role in the economic life of the country. In doing so, we take away the feeling of discrimination that may have arisen. Participation strengthens a country. It does not weaken it. Offering inclusion and a stake to the people in state institutions prevents them from seeking recognition among groups that promote armed violence or unlawful activities. It also strengthens economic development. Even in the conventional sense of economic power supporting military capability, Pakistan must strengthen its economy to meet fully its defense needs. Pakistan is the 25th largest economy in the world, but in terms of GDP per capita, it is 137th. For the last 25 years, Pakistan's economic growth has been moderate at best. The growth rate crossed 6% in 4 of 25 years. It's just 7% in 3 of those years and 8% in 1. In 13 of the 25 years, the economy grew at a rate below 4%. Contrast this with some of the high-growth economies that grew annually at 7% or more for over 25 years. The combination of large budget deficits, foreign exchange pressures, reliance on external aid, infrastructure deficit, inability to invest in a human resource, is unsustainable. The longer we delay action to redress these, the more difficult the problem becomes. We must have the material resources necessary for a strong defense and an effective foreign policy. It is time to think in terms of merging our economic, security, and development plans into a national security strategy. We need an integrated approach with each part of the state fully on board with the plans of the other. Repeated research shows that economic and institutional factors have a bearing on conflict resolution and stability in a society. Fiscal issues challenge our economic performance and our national security. Education, skills training, R&D, power, and water shortages are national issues, and they need all institutions to act in unison. A layered approach must also look beyond national borders. Today, there is a real danger of disputes getting out of control. Resolving differences with neighbors is a way to reduce meddling in each other's affairs. Creating opportunities for economic cooperation builds business stake in each other. South and Central Asia offers special potential because of its rapidly growing economies and abundance of natural resources. There are economic gains to be had from stability and connectivity in the region. Strength abroad begins at home, though. In addition to the armed forces, our society and the people of Pakistan, the strength of the economy and the effectiveness of our civil institutions add to the efficacy of our security and foreign policy. This does not mean lessening of traditional importance of security. We need a formidable defense based on well-trained and equipped armed forces. But what we propose is a wider concept. We must put people and the center of the issue of repeated bouts of violence. Thank you very much.